Welcome to the Fed Life Podcast with Dan Seip from Serving Those Who Serve. In this podcast, Dan draws from years of financial experience to help federal employees overcome challenges that every Fed can relate to. Join us for this journey as we reach, teach, and serve to help you make the right financial decisions. Now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Fed Life Podcast. Once again, I am your host, Dan Seip. Additionally, as you already know, I'm the branch manager here at Serving Those Who Serve and Lee Seip & Associates. I want to begin, as always do, by saying thank you for taking the time to listen, and thank you for your service to us. You simply do not hear that enough. And during these times, please, please, please take care of yourselves. Stay healthy. Stay well. We need you. You are important. We're back again today with the guru, the incomparable Ed Zirndorfer, as part of our ongoing mission to reach, teach, and serve you. And I want to point out that we are expanding that capability day by day, and very soon you will be able to learn from Ed anywhere. So stay tuned. I'll be coming back to that. At the outset, I always have to say the opinions of Ed Zirndorfer, no matter how amazing they are not the opinions of Raymond James or Serving Those Who Serve, this podcast is presented for information only and is not intended to be taken as advice. All listeners should consult their personal advisors before taking any action. Recently, Ed has written two articles for us in the Fed Zone, which you can read at blog.stwserve.com and also in Fed-Zone. You can get both ways. Discussing deferred retirement under CSRS and FERS. Now, if you listen to these things in order, you probably have already listened to the postponed retirement. They're not the same thing. It's one of the biggest juxtaposition of terms that I run into as an advisor and talking people through that. So that's going to be the topic of the discussion under FERS and CSRS. And as we do in the seminars a lot, we're not going to break people into their own separate rooms. So only FERS can listen to one and only CSRS can listen to the other. We'll be talking through, and there'll be times when you hear where I chime in and say, hey, now this is the form for CSRS. So it'll be blended and, you know, much like we do in the seminar. So, Ed, can you start by briefly telling us in general what deferred retirement is?
Yes, a former employee, Stan, who was covered by the Federal Employees Retirement System, or FERS, or later on we'll talk about CSRS, but in either case, either covered by CSRS or FERS, the person separated from federal service before being eligible to retire and receive what's called an immediate retirement, immediate annuity.
Gotcha.
They left federal service, and then assuming that they kept their contributions that they made to either retirement system in the system, they would receive what's called a deferred retirement, receive their annuity at a later time. Depending on how many years of service they have, they would get, would determine when they could start receiving this deferred annuity.
Okay.
It's very simple to understand in the sense that, think of it this way. If I can't retire right now, then I'm just going to have to wait to receive this annuity. It's very,
okay.
It's very simple.
So you note in the article there are four requirements. You know, the first is pretty straightforward, so why don't you touch on that?
So there are four requirements to be eligible for a deferred retirement. Number one, you cannot be eligible for an immediate retirement. Somebody has the age, has the required number of years to retire immediately, would not go for what's called a deferred retirement. In fact, if they want to retire, they're going to retire immediately. OPM is not going to say, okay, well, you can receive your retirement later, go for the deferred retirement. No, they're going to start receiving their retirement immediately, their annuity immediately.
Okay.
When I say not eligible, they're within 1 month of separating from federal service. They're eligible to retire.
Okay.
They also have to meet the minimum civilian service requirement. They have to have a minimum number of years of civilian service. Three, when they left federal service, they had the election of withdrawing, and we're talking about FERS right now. We'll talk about CSRS a little bit later. But when they left federal service, they did not withdraw their FERS contributions. What are their FERS contributions? While they were working in federal service, they were contributing to the FERS Retirement and Disability Fund, a certain portion of their paycheck. For most years, it's been 0.8% for most employees, 0.8% of their paycheck each pay date was going into the FERS retirement and disability fund. Well, when they left federal service, they didn't withdraw those contributions. That's actually their money, Dan, because sure. They pay tax on it, and they'll get that money back once they retire as part of their annuity. But when they left mm-hmm. federal service, they did have the option of withdrawing those contributions and getting it in a lump sum. If they did that, they're not eligible for a deferred retirement. And then the fourth requirement is that they can start receiving this deferred retirement, as I mentioned a few moments ago, at various ages depending on how many years of service they had when they left federal service. If they had at least 30 years of federal service when they left, they can start receiving their FERS deferred annuity starting, what's called, at their minimum retirement age. If they had between 20 and 29 years of service when they left federal service, they can start receiving their deferred annuity starting at age 60. And if they had between 5 and 19 years of service, they can start receiving their deferred annuity starting at age 62. So those are the four basic requirements.
Okay. And folks, as he always does, Ed in his articles puts together a chart that can help you through that. That's in the articles that he has in the Fed Zone. So by all means, feel free to download those, print them out as you're doing that. When we're talking about someone being ready to take this step, they're going to be separating. The annuity is not going to be starting. That's going to mean for some changes for them relative to their benefits and things like that, correct?
That is correct, because when a federal employee leaves federal service and opting for the deferred retirement, they're going to lose just about all their benefits. I say all their benefits. They're going to lose their health insurance. They're going to lose their life insurance. They're going to lose their dental and vision insurance. They actually can keep their long-term care insurance. They just have to make arrangements to pay the premiums with the long-term care partners. But I think of all the benefits I mentioned here, losing the health insurance is probably the biggest one. And I say that because when you're a federal employee and you're enrolled in the Federal Employees Health Insurance Program, health benefits program, your agency is paying on average 72 to 75% of your premiums, whether you have self-only coverage, self plus one coverage, self and family coverage. Your agency is paying almost 3/4 of your premiums. You can change your plan from year to year, and you get to keep this benefit in retirement, assuming you've been a participant in the Federal Employees Health Insurance Program for at least all the last 5 years leading up to your retirement. But when you leave mm-hmm. federal service, you'll lose that health insurance benefit permanently. That to me is a big loss. As far as the other benefits are concerned, when you leave federal service, you will get paid for all of your unused annual leave. Another thing you're going to lose when you go out under deferred retirement, you will lose credit for all of your unused sick leave hours. Ouch. Normally, when you retire from federal service and they're under CSRS or FERS, you get credit for unused sick leave hours. The sick leave hours are converted to time, added to your service time, and used in the computation of your FERS or CSRS annuity. But someone who goes out under a deferred retirement permanently loses all unused sick leave hours. It's forfeited. So, ouch. That's a big loss. TSP, you get to keep your TSP. You cannot contribute to it. You can keep it in the TSP. Now the question comes up, if someone leaves under a deferred retirement, when can they start receiving their TSP, at least their traditional TSP, without penalty? Normally, somebody retires from federal service. Dan, what is the earliest age somebody can receive their traditional TSP and not be subject to a 10% early withdrawal penalty?
If they're retiring from federal service, that would be 55.
That's correct. But somebody who leaves federal service before age 55, there are some exceptions.
They're most likely going to have to wait until 59 and a half.
They're going to have to wait till 59 and a half to start receiving their TSP and not pay a 10% early withdrawal penalty. That is correct.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that's a rundown of the benefits.
Now, as you've touched on in the past, OPM has a lot of skills, but being psychic is not one of them. So after you've made this decision and you've charted your course, they're not just going to track you down and say, here's your check, right?
That is correct. Somebody who leaves federal service under deferred retirement, under FERS, must contact OPM if they want to start receiving their annuity, assuming they've reached the age they have to, by filling out a form. And that form is?
9219.
Form 92-19 RI,
yep.
92-19. It can be downloaded from the OPM website, www.opm.gov/forms, RI 92-19. It's an application for deferred or postponed retirement. That form should ideally be filled out about 2 to 3 months before you want to receive your first annuity check. And it's mailed to OPM. The address is on the form. But again, I emphasize, you have to know the age, the earliest age you can start receiving it. So again, if somebody had 30 or more years of service, the earliest age they could start receiving their deferred annuity would be age, their MRA, the month after they become MRA, 20 to 29 years of service when they left. The earliest age they can receive their deferred annuity is the month after they become age 60, and someone who had between 5 and 19 years of service, the earliest age they can receive their deferred annuity is the month after they become age 62.
Okay. And we'll get into the details a little bit more later, but for the nice folks who may be listening along with CSRS, their form is SF-1496, correct, Ed?
That is correct. That is correct for CSRS.
Okay. And, okay, so the one thing that you touched on here that really is a huge difference, because again, if you're listening to this, you probably have already listened to the MRA plus 10, is that health benefits go away and they're not coming back. So, you know, this is something that people really need to give a lot of thought to, you know, based on, you know, and there can be a variety of reasons for somebody wanting to change jobs or careers or things like that. But when you have a big investment in your career of, you know, 10 or more years, you really want to put some thought into the best way to do it. Because again, as you touched on it, Ed, there's a whole lot of stuff that you're not going to get the benefit of, and you're not going to be able to come back into. And
well, one possible solution to that, Dan, is the employee can come back to federal service and
yep.
finish out their career.
Yep.
And then retire under a regular normal retirement, and then they would be able to keep their health benefits throughout retirement. And people have done that. They've come to work for the federal government maybe for one or two years with health benefits, with life insurance benefits, just to get those benefits, then retire and start their annuity right away without
sure.
any penalty. So people have done that.
And Ed shows some really good examples in his article. So yes, the employee has the responsibility. The first employee has the RI 9219, and then the agency has some things they have to do. Correct?
Yes, they have to fill out the form when the employee leaves federal service. The agency has to fill out what's called the standard form 3100, the individual retirement record for a FERS employee, and then they have to also fill out a form that notifies OPM that the person's losing their health benefits as well as their life insurance benefits. There's two separate
gotcha.
Forms for that. So that is the agency's responsibility that the employee should make sure they follow up on to make sure things are done correctly.
Sure.
The employee also has to fill out some more forms, beneficiary forms, which I think we'll talk about here in a few moments. But I caution employees before they go this route of deferred retirement to know all the consequences, know what's going to happen if they leave federal service. and just weigh all the positives and negatives, you know, about leaving the federal government, all the benefits you're leaving behind.
Gotcha. Nope. And I know the feds we meet, we encourage them to understand when they have a pearl of great price there. And so how are survivor benefits going to be affected by this?
If a former employee had less than 10 years of federal service when they left the federal government, let's say somebody left the federal government with, let's say, 8 years of federal service, they're eligible for a deferred retirement starting at age 62, but unfortunately the person died before the person became 62, then no survivor benefit will be paid, okay?
Ouch.
No survivor annuity benefit will be paid. Many employees are not aware of the fact that if an employee dies in service, this is a FERS employee, dies in service, that a survivor annuity benefit can be paid normally usually to a spouse if the person was married, but only if that employee had at least 10 years of federal service at the time of his or her death. This is someone, again, who dies while still in federal service. On the other hand, if somebody retires from federal service, let's say at age 62, they retire at age 62, and let's say they had 8 years of federal service, and they could. They had at least mm-hmm. 5 years. They had at least 5 years of service. They can retire under immediate regular retirement at age 62. That person can give a survivor annuity benefit. They had less than 10 years of service. However, they retired. That's why they can give a survivor benefit to a spouse. But somebody who dies in service who had less than 10 years of service will not be able to give a survivor annuity benefit to a spouse. Mm-hmm. That really hurts. And the same thing is here true with the deferred. If someone had less than 10 years of service when they left federal service and they die between the time that they get their annuity starting at age 62, no survivor annuity benefit would be paid to a surviving spouse.
Gotcha. And as we always like to remind people here at SWS, now you do in the seminars and soon to be in the webinars, encourage people to make sure your beneficiary forms are up to date. And I know Ed knows his beneficiary forms by heart. So what are those beneficiary forms, Ed, for our FERS folks?
There are actually two forms that need to be filled out for FERS employees going for a deferred retirement. They are standard form SF-3102-3102. That's designation of beneficiary of FERS contributions. Getting back to the example here, somebody had 8 years of federal service. They went for a deferred retirement, died between the time they left federal service and age 62. Then, assuming they filled out that SF-3102, naming someone, normally a spouse or children, as beneficiary, whatever money they contributed during those 8 years to the FERS Retirement and Disability Fund, this came out of their paycheck, would go in a lump sum payment to these designated beneficiaries via this form, SF-3102. And then the other beneficiary form is TSB-3, TSB beneficiary form, which always should be filled out.
Sure.
Absolutely. Those are the two beneficiary forms. One other thing, Dan, I just want to mention that a deferred annuitant, and actually even a postponed, someone who goes for a postponed retirement does not receive, and that is the retirement annuity supplement. This is someone who retires under FERS before age 62, under a regular normal retirement, even an early retirement, would be eligible for the retirement or the retirement annuity supplement. This is in addition to the FERS annuity, but the retirement annuity supplement is not paid in both a deferred and a postponed retirement. Not eligible.
Gotcha. And why don't we wrap up on FERS with how the COLAs will be treated for this type of retirement?
Okay. In general, FERS annuitants do not start receiving their cost of living adjustments until they're 62. If a FERS employee retires before age 62, let's say an MRA or age 60, they do not get a COLA until they reach age 62. So someone who goes for a deferred retirement, and starts receiving their annuity between starting at either MRA or age 60, they're not going to be able to get, there's no COLA going to be applied to that annuity until they reach age 62.
Okay, so that's an important note to make. Okay, so we worked through this and focused primarily on FERS. So let's show our CSRS a little bit of love and kind of buzz back through here, because some of it's pretty similar, but we'll try and hit the parts that are different. And you know, as far as the deferred retirement or CSRS, you know, they can't be eligible for an immediate CSRS annuity. They have to meet the minimum civilian service requirement, and they need to not have taken their money out. So they need not to have had their contributions refunded. But then there was something that popped up here that a lot of people may not be familiar with, and that's the meets 1 out of 2 year service requirement. Why don't you touch on that?
Yes. What that means, Dan, is that let's say there is a CSRS employee who was a CSRS employee, someone who served under CSRS in, let's say, had a couple stints of service. They
sure.
worked, let's say, from 1971 to 1978. They worked 7 years straight and then left. And they left Federal Service, kept their CSRS contributions. And then they came back in January 1982 and worked till July 1982. They worked 6 months. And then they left again. And in both cases, the person did not pull out his or her retirement contributions. They left their CSRS contribution system. Well, in terms of a deferred retirement, they would be eligible. They had at least 5 years of service. But mm-hmm. OPM is only going to use the first time they had 7 years, because the second time the person only had 6 months of service. They didn't have at least 1 year.
Gotcha.
So the person might as well just have asked for a refund of those contributions to get the money they put in during those 6 months, because it's not going to be used in the calculation of their deferred annuity.
Gotcha.
It has to be at least 1 year. One year.
Okay.
That's what it comes down to.
And again, with CSRS, there's some pretty profound impacts to federal benefits when you go out. You know, they'll get their annual leave, but they lose their sick leave for the computation too, right?
That's correct. And okay. there's something else that CSRS employees or former CSRS employees should be aware of. No matter how many years of service you had when you left, it could have been 5, it could have been 10, it could have been 25. No matter when you left federal service, your deferred annuity starts no earlier than age 62. This is different than FERS, because FERS, we mentioned that if you had at least 30 years of service, your deferred annuity would start at MRA. 20 to 29 years of service would start at age 60. But under CSRS, it's 62, flat 62.
Gotcha.
I want to mention something here, Dan, something that's been my experience. I've gotten to the point now, it just simply amazes me, the number of individuals I run into when I mention about this deferred CSRS retirement. Person says, you mean to tell me that my brother, my neighbor, who was in the government between 1969 to 1979, left, can actually could have gotten a deferred retirement? I said, well, assuming they kept their contributions in the system when they left, the answer is yes. Well, nobody yep. told them about that.
Yep.
Dan, the money is sitting with OPM.
Yep.
Opium is not going to do anything.
Nope.
Until they apply for it. But people are not aware of this deferred retirement. They think they had to work the full 30 years and retire at the earliest age 55 to get something out of the years of federal service. Just by working a minimum 5 years and leaving their money in the system when they left, their CSRS contributions, they're eligible for a deferred annuity starting when they're 62. But no one ever told them that. So I tell people to spread the word.
That's why we do what we do, brother. That's why we do this. That's why we have
the
blogs.
The amount of money.
That's why we're just kicking this out everywhere through every medium that we can. Because again, you know, we each have our stories. You know, my father-in-law would have made different decisions if he had only known. And there's a whole lot of people out there that don't know. And so what Ed is saying is right. You know, feds, think about you folks who have a little bit of federal time and say, hey, you know, you guys need to look into this. And if they just want to, you know, shoot an easy question to ask Ed at swserve.com, we'll make sure it gets to Ed and we can head a lot of that stuff off. And now how about for COLAs on the CSRS side?
On the CSRS side, CSRS annuitants get their COLAs right away, starting the year after they retire. They don't have to be at age 62. But again, because a deferred retirement under CSRS starts at 62, they will be eligible for the COLAs as well.
Gotcha.
Starting right away.
So they have stuff they need to do. So they've got a form they need to fill out because OPM's not going to know.
The standard form 1496, SF-1496.
And then the agency has some stuff they need to do.
And the agency has to fill out forms as well. They got to close out their retirement. I think it's standard form 3100. And they have to, again, because the person, when they leave federal service, is losing their health insurance, they have to fill out form the agency has to fill out SF-28110 and SF-28-21. The 28210 is the form that is used to permanently remove the person's eligibility from health benefits, and the 28-21 is to remove the person's eligibility for federal life insurance benefits. So the agency's responsibility is to get those forms filled out and submitted to OPM.
And they've got to close out the SF-2806. And also, you noted in here in your article, but I think we're both going to say the same thing, which is the SF-2802, which is application for pulling the money out. Folks, you really need a compelling reason to do that, because what you've heard in this podcast and the previous one is there's the ability for that to be worth something to you later in life that is going to be a guaranteed income. Now, maybe, you know, there's not health insurance with it or something like that, depending upon how it worked out for you. But there absolutely could be an income that you cannot outlive that is backed by the full faith and credit of the United States of America. And those are very, very powerful terms. I don't care what you hear on talk radio or anything like that. As long as there is a U.S., full faith and credit, I believe, is going to mean something. And so... You know, I guess the last thing, is to again hit those beneficiary forms and then talk a little bit about the survivor benefits, because they've got some of the same rules as FERS if somebody passes away before 62. So let's go ahead and talk about the survivor benefits to sort of wrap this up.
Okay, so CSRS has survivor benefits available to a spouse, or a former spouse, someone the person used to be married to, if there's a court order. If the person dies after they start receiving the CSRS, this deferred annuity, but if the person died before they reach age 62, this is the person who's going to receive this deferred annuity, dies before 62, then there's no survivor benefit being paid to a surviving spouse or surviving former spouse. Also, The same is true if the former spouse actually reaches age 62 but dies before filling out an application for deferred retirement. Again, there are people who are not aware of this about this deferred CSRS retirement. I mentioned about this, and the person may be 70 years old, Dan. I've run into people 70 years old, and they said, I didn't know I could get this deferred retirement. Well, here's the form that needs to be filled out, and SF-1496, I'll do it right away. The person forgets, doesn't do it, and dies.
Gotcha.
No survivor benefit will be paid to a spouse. It has to form, they got to fill out the application form and submit it. If they die before they actually submit the application form, it's no matter what age they are, there's going to be no survivor benefit being paid to a surviving spouse.
Okay.
Also, theoretically, children's survivor benefits can be paid. Again, this is for children under the age of 18 or under the age of 22. They're full-time students. I guess there are not too many former CSRS employees who have children that age because, you know, the CSRS being the older system. However,
sure.
And I know, Dan, you know about this.
I do.
If a child was disabled before age 18, and one of the parents or both parents were CSRS or FERS employees, and the parent dies as an employee or as an annuitant, then this disabled child is eligible for children's survivor benefits for the rest of his or her life.
Yep.
Again, the child must have been disabled before age 22. So it is possible that there is a former CSRS employee who has a disabled child. And
sure.
This disabled child would be eligible for these children's survivor benefits if this person is starting to receive a deferred CSRS annuity.
Yep. So Fed's going to deputize you with something here because, you know, we're in a tough time right now, so we're not able to get together and hang out, but the day will come. We're back to having barbecues and things like that. So talk to your non-Fed neighbors, and relatives. You know, even your crazy uncle, and say, hey, did you ever do any time in federal service? Did you leave your money in? Okay, you may have a pension, and if they don't want to do a lot of digging, Ed will happily answer that question.
I just like to just follow up and just with the thing you just mentioned. When employees talk to me, email me, and they ask me, you know, I'm really unhappy. And while I'm a federal employee, I don't like what I'm doing. I'm not getting along with my boss. I don't like the politics, whatever the reason is. And I really would like to leave federal service. I said, fine. You got to be happy with what you're doing. But just make me one promise. Do this for yourself. Whatever you do, don't be tempted to withdraw your contributions to either CSRS or FERS. Because if you don't, you're not going to get any deferred retirement. Leave the money in the system.
Yep.
There are two reasons for that. One, if you don't come back to federal service, you will be eligible for at least a deferred annuity. Two, you can always come back. And if you come back and if you've left your money in the system, you will not lose those years of service that you have did. You work so hard, you're going to get credit for those. But by withdrawing that money, you're going to lose all those years of credit in federal service. So please leave your money in the system. At the very least, you'll get an annuity later.
Sure.
For the rest of your life.
Great advice, Ed, as always. Hey, folks, that's a wrap. Ed'll be back as we continue to work together to reach, teach, and serve you. That's right, Ed, you're going to come back, right?
Absolutely.
We are Serving Those Who Serve. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on our YouTube channel and now on Spotify. Remember to share it with friends, strangers, and even people you don't like that much, because there's a whole lot of help that can happen because of this. So if each Fed would tell another Fed and tell another Fed, pretty soon we're going to be able to reach all the Feds. Right, Ed?
Absolutely.
So check us out on Twitter and LinkedIn. We are not, as you're already aware, if you've gone to our websites, we're not running our live seminars right now, but we do have Virtual Ed Zerndorfer coming now. It'll be going live within the next 2 weeks. We have his highly, highly popular TSP and tax seminar that will be done on a webinar. He'll be teaming up with our firstborn son here, Wes Battle. If you go back to the original podcast, you'll hear his story. And they are definitely a dynamic duo. It's going to be fun. It's going to be interactive. So there's going to be stuff that Ed's going to be going through live. And then you're going to have the opportunity to get questions in, and Ed will answer those live. So you'll be able to hear your question answered. If there's too many, we'll be getting to you after the podcast is over, but you will have the opportunity to do that. So watch for that coming. It'll be part of our continuing mission to reach, teach, and serve you. So it'll be Ed where you need him, when you need him. Okay. You can listen in your bunny slippers. So it'll be a great experience for you. So all part of our mission to reach, teach, and serve you. So for Ed, the crew at Serving Those Who Serve, and me, Dan Sipe, number one, please stay safe and well. Take care of yourselves. We need you. Good luck, Godspeed, and above all, remember, it's your Fed life. Make it a great one because you deserve it. Stay well, everybody. We are out.
Thank you for listening to the Fed Life Podcast. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Serving Those Who Serve or Raymond James. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning. Securities offered through Raymond James Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Raymond James Financial Services Advisors Incorporated. Serving Those Who Serve is not a registered broker dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services.
Raymond James is not affiliated and does not endorse the opinions or services of any of the quoted professionals or their respective firms. Any opinions are those of Dan Sipe and not necessarily those of RJFS or Raymond James. This case study is for illustrative purposes only. Individual cases will vary.
Neither Raymond James Financial Services nor any Raymond James financial advisor renders advice on tax issues. These matters should be discussed with the appropriate professional. Investing involves risk, and you may incur a profit or loss regardless of strategy selected, including diversification and asset allocation.
Raymond James is not affiliated with and does not endorse the opinions or services of the quoted professionals or their respective organizations.